If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, February 26, 2019. That's Ian Ferguson.
Hello.
And I'm Pat Contra. You'll be here to discuss lots of good stuff. Reggie Fils-Aimé is retiring from Nintendo. We're talking about hardcore Genesis game to be packed in with the release of the Analog Mega SG. Epic Games suing a Fortnite festival, one I mentioned on the podcast last time. Maybe other, a few other topics, maybe a Q&A or two. We got back from SoCal Retro Gaming Expo in Pasadena, California. Scenic and beautiful and sunny Pasadena. Beautiful area.
Yeah. Actually, it really was. I didn't know what to expect of Pasadena. I'd never been there before.
A lot of old money.
Yeah, you can tell there's a lot of money there of some sort. But yeah, the area where the convention was held in was really cool. There was a nice little like open-air mall with tons of eateries. And yeah, I enjoyed the area quite a bit.
Yeah, and this was the first time SoCal Retro Gaming Expo was held in Pasadena. They had a Frank and Son Collectible Show before. Bobby is the son of the owner of Frank and Son Collectible Show, and so he runs it, does a great job. Yeah, there's probably like 4,000 people there over the weekend.
Yeah,
it was Saturday was really jumping. Yep. And Sunday was, some conventions, Sundays are dead. This was not dead. No. It was still a little busy.
Well, I think that can be attributed to they had a really good, you know, if they weren't buying, they were going back for the console arcade, the free play arcade. You know, they had a lot of really nice setup.
I didn't even get a chance to look through the arcade and see what was going on.
I was challenged to a game of pinball, and then I played a little Sunset Riders with a nice dude who's our a regular customer at Luna.
Did you play the AVP machine that was set up?
No, I didn't.
Specially designed?
Oh, was it?
Yeah, because they made it off of the, what's the type that it goes underneath and goes to the console area?
Oh.
What's that machine called, that machine type? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a dedicated Alien vs. Predator, sure. But they modded one of those, you know, like you always see the fighting games. What the hell are those called?
Candy cab?
No, not a candy cab. The monitor's separate.
Oh, those. I can't remember what they're called. But the
Dynamo.
Ones, yeah.
They're Dynamo cabinets.
That's actually how I used to see Alien vs. Predator mostly.
Oh, really?
In Buffalo was on those Dynamo.
But traditionally, things. Usually fighting games, so more people can walk mm-hmm. around because the control panel is like 3.5-4 feet from the monitor, or something right. like that. So it's a little more set and it's up more. Had a great time. Thanks for coming out, everyone, to the panel on Saturday. It's probably about 150 people or so.
Yeah,
at our Saturday panel, we discussed one topic that we're going to be segueing into in a bit. We also discussed bathroom etiquette.
Yeah,
and washing
sure
your hands. And there's a controversy on the CU podcast for bathroom etiquette. So a question came up about washing your hands and the procedure leaving a bathroom. And Ian likes to soap up before getting his hand moist with water.
That's right. I soap up first.
And like me in the civilized society, we agreed that you want to moisturize with your hand first with some water. That gets that activation going a little bit better with the soap. It can foam up better. It's not all dry and disgusting.
But if
it's
someone,
just what someone does.
If someone peed on the faucet, that soap gives me a protective barrier before I turn the water on.
But you're going to the soap anyway as your final movement, so it doesn't matter.
Okay, fine.
I ripped holes through that theory. But so that it was really fun. It was a great panel. Surprisingly or not, you know, I know the internet hates us now. We hate gamers. We didn't get anyone coming up to saying that they couldn't stand us because of our take on a mobile game.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. Not that surprising, but it just shows how little that really mattered and how much that was just manufactured bullshit outrage for the sake of it.
Yes, indeed.
You know, you think that you'd be like, oh, there's going to be like a couple people come up and say, man, you guys fell off or I disagree with you. No one gives a shit because it's not an issue. It wasn't an issue, really. Right?
Yes, it's not. I mean, it never was an issue. Someone asked about it at the Q&A, and I feel like we gave a pretty good answer about it.
Sure, but they weren't antagonistic.
They weren't.
Honest, like, what do you think went down? Shout out to Retrobit. Can you hand me one of those controllers, Ian?
Yeah.
Given out to me and Ian, we got a Sega Saturn USB controller, the Model 2 controller. Nice. And then also a Sega Genesis 8-button controller that Ian's struggling to get around his mic stand. I don't know why this is an issue, but... so, yeah, these are coming out soon. I believe the USB ones are $20, and the ones that aren't USB are $15. They're $5 less. They are $20 and $25. Nice. I think the Genesis ones are a little bit cheaper than the Saturn ones. But these look good, and they also have their N64 controllers coming out that are modeled after the Hori N64 controllers.
Yes, those look nice.
So they look really good. So the Hori controllers were third-party controllers that they didn't make a lot of them, and so they sell used for like $80-$90. So these are modeled after those. You know, they're like a little bit circular, and they have the cute little D-pad on the bottom. Yeah. And the thumbstick is like fatter and better than the N64.
Yeah, just overall thumbstick. More comfortable.
And then finally, Ian, sorry, I should have put this on this side. My pal Blake Harris, as Leo moves, has released to Acclaim, the author of Console Wars, The History of the Future. Wow, you really are sick. This is not heavy at all.
No, I know.
The History of the Future, Oculus, Facebook, and the revolution that swept virtual reality. So this was a long time coming, forward by Ernest Cline, author of Ready Player One. So this goes into Oculus and Facebook and all that, and basically Palmer and his rise and eventual fall as well. So any fans of his first book should probably check this out. Or if you're into VR and what's going on with it and where it's been at, this is the book. And Blake, I will finish this. I'm sorry I never finished Console Wars. I'm sorry about that. So shout out there as well. So NES Marathon's coming up March 9th and 10th.
Darn tootin'.
Go to NESmarathon.com. That'll be raising money for a nonprofit children's hospital, Rady Children's Hospital, one of the best children's hospitals in the U.S., they it's about 530 beds, I believe, they have at the facility, and doing great work in all forms of pediatrics there. And we also have a Kickstarter, right?
Yes,
that's
you
at,
do.
That's at, what is that at? Jeez, I should know. UltimateSNES.com. What is that? I should know. I should be checking this. You think I'd be checking this every morning. But no, with the convention going on, I wasn't able to. It's at 71,799 backers. Be the 800th backer and get a no prize when you're the 800th backer. There's 17 days to go there. Check it out. Thank you so much for the support so far there. And I'll do some advertising here and there for that as well the next coming weeks. Looks like the marathon's at $600 starting off. We're also looking for sponsors for the NES Marathon as well. More details on the page there. And you can see the cute little artwork. Unfortunately, Alex is cut off because I had to crop it for the GoFundMe page. So Alex wouldn't mind. Alex is the best.
He's a chill guy.
But that's cool, man. That's cool.
Yeah.
He wouldn't care about that. We also did so. We also took out the trash last week on Twitter. It was a fun time. It was two individuals, two cockroaches that, well, every once in a while you just have to stamp out. And people say, why bother with people low in the totem pole? It's to make an example sometimes. And I felt it was necessary, and so did Ian. So we dealt with it the best way we could. And these are individuals that, I will just say, took the wrong path. They took the dark path.
They did.
These are both individuals that used to do regular gaming news and game reviews. And these two individuals realized either this is too hard or too difficult, or either I don't have the talent to make it doing this.
Yeah, they just suck.
So they decided we're going to be drama channels. And we're going to just talk about other YouTubers. So we were two of the YouTubers they spoke about during the Diablo Immortal thing. And yeah, they got short-term views at the time. But they I think, realized, if not before by now, that that's not the right path. And not just burning bridges and pissing off people and cultivating a toxic piece of shit audience. It's going to come back to...
community, man.
It's going to come back to bite you. And it did in a big way, as I put both of them in their cowardly places. And the reason I'm calling them cowardly is because I expected at least one of them to show up at SoCal Retro Gaming Expo, because they're both within driving distance of that event. And at least I have respect for you as a man, as if you said something to my face you had a problem with. And neither of you did, and that goes to show you what you're made of, which isn't much. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Ian, anything to add?
No, I was... just thinking about how long it's been since I've been at Chuck E. Cheese, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We should take a visit soon.
Yeah.
We should do that.
Yeah.
All right, on with the program. All right, so at SoCal Retro Gaming Expo, Ian, we did a panel.
We did.
It was a fun time. It was controversial. soaping up habits. Ian also revealed his...
I'm afraid of someone calling me up for not washing my hands when I did.
At a convention, yep.
That'll ruin a person.
So just that Ian's telling you, just follow him into these public bathrooms with your camera going like TMZ style. But no. But we spoke about Reggie Fils-Aimé is going to be retiring from as president from Nintendo of America in April. And we spoke about that at SoCal. So we're gonna segue. Kieran's going to segue right now to it. They are ready.
Talk about something that just came out in the news a couple days ago.
Yeah.
About Reggie Fils-Aimé. Beloved president of Nintendo America, decided to retire.
Yes.
And
wants to spend more time with his friends, his family, and his children. It's very sweet.
Instead of just shepherding a video game company in America.
Yes.
So there's been a lot of feels out there for Mr. Fils-Aimé, because he's been working with Nintendo, started vice president of marketing in around 2003, and then he went up to president a couple years later. And everyone likes Reggie.
Yeah, he's a goddamn cutie.
Okay, he's a cute guy. He's like 6'4", if you ever see him in person. He's a
handsome man.
Yes. Maybe he played linebacker in college. I don't know.
Looks like he'll break out of any suit he's in.
He's got those shoulders.
Just has to pose it down, and out he comes.
But he became beloved because of all, you know, he was always always doing the E3 conferences. And then when they really stopped doing that the past couple of years, Nintendo Directs, he's been a face of those as well. And he really was, he put a happy sort of face on the business side of Nintendo. And you usually see that with presidents or CEOs of companies. And I think that's one of the reasons why people were so ingratiated with the man.
Yeah, people became attached to him. I think one of the big things that, at least for me, one of the points where I was like, okay, this guy's kind of cool is... don't remember where it was at, but it was when he pulled the DS out of his pocket and showed that he had over 100 hours on Dragon Quest IX. And it was like, oh, okay, I mean, you're not... I mean, you're a corporate CEO. You're bullshitting some of the time, but at least you like the stuff that you're selling.
Well, sure. You know, you have to be the head of this gigantic company. You also have to listen to Nintendo in Japan. So you're walking this line. At the same time, you want to put a happy face on a huge North American market that maybe conservative Japan won't do. So it was great that they had all the skits that they would shoot. Mm-hmm. You know, Reggie as a Terminator is one of the most famous ones. They did the Robot Chicken one a few years ago when it was all the stop motion stuff.
Yeah, the Muppets.
Which was great. You know, when Reggie, like, he terminated the guy asking about Earthbound 3, remember the audience? Yeah. It was fantastic stuff that you wouldn't see a huffy puffy, maybe corporate giant necessarily do. In order to, you know, push out new games. And yet he was there doing lows and highs and lows. You know, the Wii did gangbusters, and then the Wii U was the dark ages, so to speak, in Nintendo's lifespan. And now he's stuck around to make sure that, you know, the company's going out, and he's going out in a good way with the Switch doing gangbusters and the company being in good shape.
It's pretty amazing to see CEO, someone in a big business these days leave on their own terms. Not disgraced.
Yeah.
You know, leaving in good health, happy of his own volition.
Yeah, 15 years for someone as a president, excuse me, who's COO, that's a good run, especially when you have to answer not just to potential shareholders, but a parent company that's international.
Yes.
Who could yank him at any point. So he did a good job. What can I say? The only experience I have personally with Reggie, and this isn't just people just thinking he's a good guy because. I mean, people like our friend Gerard has interviewed him, mm-hmm. and very sad to see him go. Like, he's a genuine guy. And, of course, it's business first. But he realized this is a video game and you know, an almost novelty company in a way. And he made sure he was presentable, he was professional, but also had fun. Did he say he was going to kick that guy's ass in Smash Bros. On stage the one time a few years back? Mm-hmm. He knew how to have fun. He knew how to pose.
People thought that was a scandal.
That he said that at the time? And then
that's unprofessional.
And then even in his outro video, he said, yes, my body is ready. He recognized the big meme that Brent Floss did a song even of that. And so he knew what his role was, at least as the face going forward to the public. Internally, sure. You don't know how he really governed, but you assume that 15 years, that there's no bad stories about the guy, that you assume that he did a good job.
Sure.
You know, internally at Nintendo of America. Look at that happy face. Look at those cheeks. Just want to squeeze them.
I know.
And, 50,
he's a cherub.
At 57, that's a good time to get out, you know? So that means he started around 43-ish, 42-ish.
Happy and rosy.
Yeah, and the one time I saw him, I was at E3 when they were still doing that, doing the big Nintendo Directs, and then I saw him like about an hour and a half afterwards. He was walking around. He was doing the Street Pass thing on the 3DS. That must have been like 2012. I saw him with it. He had it. He was talking to someone. I didn't want to say hi, Reggie. He wouldn't know who the hell I was. I didn't want to bother him, but he was walking around, you know.
I miss Street Pass.
You miss Street Pass? You don't do that anymore? I used to have it open at the conventions.
Yeah, me too.
Fantastic. I will say, though, is that the one thing that I would caution people against is that you can be sad that someone who's a president of the company leaves. I just always get weirded out a little bit just because when people say they're like, I think we mentioned about
when I said, when I was reading, multiple people were crying over it. It's like,
is that a little much for you, crying over a president of a company leaving?
Yeah.
When you start to stretch into, that's when you start to stretch into the idolatry of a corporation a bit. And that's what I always get a little bit hesitant about.
Yes.
Whether it's someone like Steve Jobs, whether someone runs Microsoft or Nintendo of America, these are business people that they measure their own success about, is the company doing well? Is it making money? And that's really where, to me, it begins and ends. But yeah, it's cool that publicly you're cool and that you like the product, but let's relax about people's emotional roller coaster over a president deciding to retire happy with a ton of money. It's like, yeah,
that's kind of a good thing. Yeah, if you like,
yeah.
Reggie's kind of that intersection too, I think, of his personality was good for the business, but I do think that it was more or less a true personality, but you never know.
Sure. And then he's being succeeded by Doug Bowser, which we have all the jokes about Bowser taking over Nintendo. We get it. Bowser's evil. But he seems like the guy that...
Fill in the blank here with the jokes you've heard.
Yes. Yeah. No more Mario games ever. But it sounds like Doug Bowser is someone that Nintendo in Japan are very happy with, and he has a good relationship with them, so it sounds like he was the perfect guy to come in and take over. Like, so it sounds like it's going to be a pretty smooth transition, at least internally. On the outside, I'm not sure how much of a performer he's going to be on camera or doing those skits, but that's not as important, probably, business-wise. They can always get someone else to do that, like that guy Bill that shows up and always gets made fun of.
Oh, Bill Trennan?
It says you're fired, Bill, and it's, yeah. So they have enough people out there to make up for it if Doug's not photogenic, but that's like the first responsibility as a COO or president of a company.
I do hope that they, I mean, maybe it's not Doug Bowser, but I do hope they find, I don't know, another familiar face, because there was Iwata, there was Reggie, and I don't know, yeah, who else is it now? It went from a very seemingly personable company to, I don't know, maybe it'll be Cold again.
This is a quote from Doug. It has been my great fortune to work with and be mentored by Reggie for 4 years at Nintendo of America, Bowser said. And rest assured, we will continue to build on his work to evolve and expand our brand, your favorite word, furthering Nintendo's global mission of creating smiles. There are millions more of those to come.
Is there more corporate speak? No bottom lines, no.
No blue skying it. Visa May started Nintendo America in 2003 as its executive vice president of sales and marketing and became its president and COO in May 2006. It's a pretty fast rise.
Yeah, that's not
it's good. His time with Nintendo began during the Nintendo GameCube and Game Boy Advance era. His leadership in Nintendo's largest territory expanded the audience for Nintendo products as phenomena like Nintendogs, Brain Age, Wii Sports, these were big hits. And Wii Fit brought millions of new players to the world of video games. This is a press release. So, yeah. So, he was there when it blew up in, 2006, 2007.
Right.
I'm not saying how much he's personally responsible, because, that stuff comes from Japan, a lot of it. But, you can help with the marketing and put the spin on things in the U.S. You still have responsibilities, Yeah. But you're not doing the heavy development like they are in Japan.
Sure.
It's still a big, there's a big load to shoulders.
A lot of people credit him. Sorry.
Is that Bowser?
Yeah. A lot of people credit him with... Ferguson, where are you going with this? A lot of people credit him with the reissue of the NES Classic and the larger availability of the SNES Classic, realizing that there was a market for it and saying something.
Yeah, I would say that if you had it... Yeah, that's a good point, because Nintendo Japan was so strict about, not... dealing with the retro side at all.
Yeah, and the understanding of the U.S. market isn't perfect either. I mean, Jesus, thinking that that many NES classics was going to be enough, that was insane.
Yeah, so he probably, I can picture, like I said, Reggie probably had some spirited conversation about, hey, we're leaving a lot of money on the table here.
Spirited.
Reggie's got his Negan bat, I'm sure.
Did you get hungry?
No, I dropped this mouse on my wood floor probably like 18 times, so that's why it's cracked up.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that's a good point, though, is that the sort of turnaround Nintendo's thought about their old properties, including the Switch Online, including like a Netflix-style NES thing, mm-hmm. which at first that was not going to be the plan with the Switch Online. Maybe you can credit that to Reggie and the team, saying, listen, retro may not be huge in Japan, but it's bigger in the U.S. You know, maybe that's something you guys should pay attention to. They're like, okay, you're right, Reggie, please don't kill us. Please don't come after us. No, Reggie's a nice guy. But he's a big guy.
Intimidating.
I wouldn't wrestle him, Reggie. Probably wasn't a nice guy to wrestle him. I'm making up facts about Reggie Fils-Aimé right here.
I'd go after him. Ankle locks. Submissions.
Ankle locks?
Yeah.
You think he's a
submit,
yeah,
that's
Reggie?
That's the only way to take him out.
Slightly above you. You're like a middleweight. He's a super heavyweight.
I'm scrappy.
You're scrappy?
Like a bird. A little bird.
All right, anything else to add on Mr. Fils-Aimé? I wish him a warm retirement. He's retiring in April. He can rest up with his family and kids and maybe grandkids on the way. Who knows? And he can still enjoy his 3DS. We're still playing that, his Switch.
He'll be able to play all the pranks he wants on April Fool's. He won't be working.
Yeah, maybe they'll bring him back with some of those videos. Why not? They'll have him in.
I feel like he's a prankster.
He's a prankster?
I think he's a prankster.
Okay.
But not one of those shitty YouTube pranksters.
That's an old hat at this point.
Reggie's probably a... We're really defining Reggie to our own territory.
Yeah, we're thinking.
I feel like he's a whoopee cushion guy.
A whoopee cushion?
No, he's a whoopee cushion and joy buzzer guy. 100%.
Not the blue gum guy. No. Not a joy buzzer guy.
No.
Not the ice cube fly guy.
I had one of those.
You had ice cube flies?
Yeah, I had fake poop too.
Okay. That's good to know. Audience is enthralled by that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, well, okay. Bye, Reggie.
Woo! We're back.
Yay.
Some salient points made as usual. I think I rambled on for too long in the beginning. Ian, I don't mind that you slapped the mic away from me at some point. At first, I was a little mad. I know we almost broke up. The podcast was almost done there. But yeah, that was our coverage of Reggie, and we wish him well in his retirement.
Yep.
Ian.
So.
We got the Analog Mega SG coming out.
That's right.
It's going to be the HD Genesis FPGA console that you are super excited for, and I'll probably get one as well. The Super NT over there is fantastic.
Yeah,
they're works of art.
They're great units. So the
total unit, absolute unit.
The exciting news coming out about the Mega SG right now is they're going to include a digital copy right on the system of a game called Hardcore. They're going to be calling it, I believe, Ultra Core for copyright reasons or something like that.
Ultra Core.
Okay. We actually discussed this, I don't even know how long ago, a year ago.
Really?
Yeah, we talked about Hardcore. It was a Genesis game that was unreleased from 1994. It was almost entirely finished, and it was done by DICE.
We did talk about this.
Yes, we did. And
whoa,
so...
looks cool.
Yeah, it does. It's a Turrican-style
run-and-gun
shooter. It's the type some people call Euro-style run-and-gun shooter.
And that's because there's a lot of traversing, like, vertically in levels as well,
yeah,
going back.
Versus
traditional run-and-gun, you just go forward.
Right, it's not exactly like a Metroid game, but it's, you know, there's lots of areas to explore.
Sure.
So
graphics are great.
Yeah, it looks wonderful, and, yeah, it's going to be included, which is awesome.
The same way they included the Super... Turrican with the Super NT.
Exactly. So this is fantastic. It'll give a lot of people a chance to play it. It's neat that, you know, when you get this system, you're not going to, it says it in this article, but I agree that you'll actually get to play a brand new game from that era. You know, it's not an indie game that looks retro. It's a straight up Genesis title. So that should be pretty cool.
This is great. Apparently they worked out a deal to include this, so that's good. The only known source code came from a single dead hard drive that was barely recovered.
Yep.
And that's what I mean about game preservation. A lot of this is very touch and go when it comes to these games seeing the light of day or not.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's games out there that the developers even don't know. Well, I don't know where that is. I don't know what could have happened to it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why when this comes out, this is a joyous day when this stuff happens. And like I said, when you take a look, yeah, you can get Smart Bomb. The green blaster twirls around real quick. It looks beautiful. The animation frames it, you know, it just looks great. Yeah, like you said, it is like a Euro style sort of shooter. You're not going in a straight line, really. You know, it's almost like I'm trying to think of an analog besides a Super Terracon that you do this, where you know you're taking your time. I mean, there's a time limit, but you can you're traveling around the level, doing whatever you want to do, exploring. So. Yeah, so this is going to cost. What is this going to cost? The
$189.99.
Are out of your mind? It's going to ship in April already. Already, wow! And this is going to. I think it's going to sell well. It'd be interesting to see after this what Analog has planned, because they would have covered the two major 16-bit systems. At that point, you know, there's not a huge amount of cartridge systems left to go. Ian's really hoping for the FPGA PC Engine, I'm guessing.
That's right.
That would be revolutionary, I think. And then the modding scene will cry because no one ever needed to get a modded a PC Engine ever again. Well, I guess maybe for the CD games. Maybe they'll figure that out.
Well, that's what I was... I'm like,
maybe. Maybe they'll figure out... maybe they'll say, hey, you can just plug in a USB, you know, DVD drive or something, or CD drive. Maybe they'll just have that capability. Well, that'd be simple.
Wouldn't that be spiffy?
I don't see why they wouldn't. You're just loading the data from somewhere.
Yeah.
Into RAM, right? Or into read-only memory. Whatever.
The only thing that I could think of that'd be weird is that system is really touchy with drive speeds. Like, if you're trying to burn a game and whatnot, you have to do it at, like, one speed. I wonder if, you know, you could even get a type of drive that would...
Well, I'm just talking about using a drive to play the real software still.
Sure.
And load it up.
Yeah.
That's all. You're talking about playing a burned game on
it. I'm talking about, like... Is the system touchy to the speed of the drive? Like, would you need a drive of that sort?
Nah,
for that era?
They'll figure it out. Come on,
people are smart.
Kev Trish is a genius. He'll figure it out. That's small potatoes. All right. Anything else to add?
No.
So it's Ultra Core due to licensing reasons. So there you go. It's a 25-year-old game that we are now seeing that was lost before. All right. So I mentioned this briefly during. You know where the official battle royale forecast for Fortnite.
I am the Apex Legend.
You're the Apex Legend.
That's how good I am at Battle Royale games.
and Public Battlegrounds G.
Public Battlegrounds G. That sounds like a Japanese game, a shooter.
It does?
Yeah, the addition of like just a random letter really seems like it seals that deal.
So I briefly touched upon this last time, but about how this festival was done, trying to do a Fortnite festival. They had like a bouncy house, and they had little rides, and you can play Fortnite there. It was in Norwich. So Epic Games got word of it, maybe from the official Battle Royale podcast, I don't know. And they're going to be pursuing legal action against the company. For the this was a disastrous festival. This was not worth people's time.
This was a much smaller scale fire festival.
Yeah. The organizer, Exciting Events, says it has been forced to cease all trading activities immediately. So the email was sent to all their customers and forwarded to Eurogamer by an aggrieved party. From Sean Lord, the head of Exciting Events Limited. In his statement, Lord insisted that the vast majority of children love Fortnite Live Norwich.
I'm sure they did.
And claimed that Exciting Events were still committed to hosting two future Fortnite Live events. And after all the national publicity and personal abuse and threats experienced by the directors and family of the business. However, in response to the media frenzy, Lord continued, Epic Games have now forced the shutdown of the two pre-booked Fortnite Live events, with the immediate removal of all promotional communication from the public domain. So, you think Epic Games was happy that someone went out of their way to do a Fortnite festival without their input?
No.
That's probably what it was, Mr. Lord.
Yeah, I mean, regardless
of whether or not this was a success or a disaster.
And it was a disaster, but they wouldn't have been happy regardless. There's a line in here where further down, I believe, where he says that the Fortnite festival is for the children, much like Wu-Tang is for the children.
It's all for the children.
But it's for the money. I mean, you don't run a Fortnite fest and then have very little Fortnite-themed activities there unless you're trying to dupe people out of their money.
If it's a business venture, it's for the money.
Money, yeah.
Yes, the children could have fun if you put on a proper event, but it's for the money. This is a business that's now getting destroyed because
you charged for a ticket, so it's
for
not,
the money.
Yes,
it's not charity. Yeah. It's either a charity event or it's a profit event. You know, like that's what you got there. That's what you're falling into there. So in the original story, this made international headlines. Like it came all the way to CU Podcast. The original story just said tickets prices were too high, the attractions were terrible, families who did pay were left queuing in the cold. I like the word queuing.
Me too.
Some refunds were issued in the day, but the event's Facebook page has disappeared. Very little at the event was actually related to Fortnite, and absolutely none of it was officially licensed.
Yeah, they used the font, they used the name, they used characters, they used the game. So, yeah, you know, I mean, just trying to throw something together for the children.
The quality of our player experiences is incredibly important to us, whether it's inside the game or at official public events like last year's Fortnite Pro-Am. An Epic Games spokesperson said, Epic Games was not in any way associated with the event that took place in Norwich, and we've issued a claim against the organizers in the High Court of London.
Woo! Did you see this picture down here at the bottom? It looks like it's being held in a 4-H facility, and it has, like,
it's a little
two rows of booths.
It's a warehouse with some booths. It looks like there's some vendors there hanging out. And, yeah, it was a total cash-in on the name. Of a popular game, and you know that's a registered trademark. I guess trademark laws are probably similar in the UK versus here. So Epic Games is going to go after them. Though they'd also go after an Unreal Tournament festival if one ever came up. But you know what? Since you haven't done a new game in 12 years, there's no need to do one. There's no need to do a festival
that.
Maybe Paddle start one up. Just to get on the radar there.
Anytime something gets this big, you can pretty much expect something
gonna be
like
a knockoff.
This to happen.
I'm surprised I haven't seen more knockoff merchandise already. Like, I guarantee you that...
Maybe we're not looking hard enough, because I'm sure it's out there.
I want to go back to the Jersey Shore this year to see knockoff Fortnite stuffed animals. Like, I want to go back to the 80s, how they had the knockoff ETs. I want to see knockoff llamas and characters from Fortnite on the boardwalk, on the Jersey Shore. Good old Jersey Shore.
A knockoff AK-47.
With the totally legit game wheels that are totally regulated by the Gaming Commission of New Jersey that didn't care about, you know, kids in the 80s and 90s putting down 50 cents, quarter, a dollar a time to spin those wheels that were totally random.
Absolutely. Totally. Random. Not weighted or anything.
Not like weighted. Or not controlled by fucking buttons underneath by the people, by the teenagers usually working there, manning it. I'm not even making this up. I could probably write a book about the Jersey Shore based upon just my experiences. You'd go there.
Beat you to it.
You go there, and there's like 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds in high school working at gambling wheels where money is exchanging hands. Not games of skill. Not the rigged games of skill.
Games,
which makes it totally gambling. Sorry about that. That's nothing to do with Fortnite. Okay. This is an article that I saw our friend of the show, Chris Kohler of Kotaku fame, formerly of Wired. Great gaming journalist. He's been a Not-So-Common podcast. We butt heads on Twitter sometimes when it comes to the future of game collecting.
He knows how to make instant curry delicious.
Instant curry?
Delicious. He modifies it.
I feel like I don't have enough curry in my life.
It's very good.
So he put an article up that was actually originally from early February that he wrote that about a collector offering to pay $100,000 for original Contra box art. And the timing was interesting, going back and looking at when this article was written, February 2nd. Just because 4 days later, another $100,000 thing happened with the sale of the Super Mario Brothers sealed NES game. Even though that news didn't come out for a week or so later. And on the surface, you're like, well, how are these two things connected? Well, the person offering $100,000 for original Contra box art is a collector named Dan, who's also known... on Nintendo Age in the circle as Bronte, who is someone who got very, very close. I believe when I last knew about it, he was like one or two games away from a completely sealed NES set.
That's wild. What were the ones he needed? Did you know?
I don't know specifically which ones. I heard rumors of one of them, but it would shock you because it was not a rare game. It was just one that you never found sealed. And he wouldn't tell the community about it because then they would jack the price of the people that have it.
Gotcha.
But, 99% sure, everyone in the world is sure that this is the man who sold the sealed Super Mario Brothers for $100,000 because he had almost every game when there's only one known Super Mario Brothers. So this is the man.
Aha.
This is a man, but this is also a guy that he seems like a nice guy, but oh boy, when I was posting on Nintendo Age regularly back in like 2008, 9, 10, boy, did we butt heads in about sealed collecting and grading of things in threads back then. I mean, we went back and forth, me and this individual from Canada, I believe. A 42-year-old accountant from Vancouver, British Columbia. Nice man, but boy, this when I reference about people not being true game collectors that are into seal collectors. This is like an example, because I remember in our threads of us discussing it where I said this is why materially sealed game collecting is different than regular game collecting, because sealed game collecting, you're only concerned about the box quality and more so the sealed quality.
Sure.
If you're a game collector, you're more concerned about acquiring a game and materials related to that game and potentially playing those games.
Sure.
To me, it's different. It's like with record collectors. Most record collectors would want to play potentially a disc at one point or an
record
album.
Record collectors who leave their stuff sealed are dumb, because over time the plastic shrinks and brings in the corners and ruins the corners of the records.
So in that case, it sounds like it's similar. While there are people that might be sealed record collectors, they're the minority, and the rest of the collectors like, well, you're materially different because you're not experiencing what you're collecting.
Sure.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Because you can display a sealed game up, but it's, to me, the same as displaying a box game up. The art's the same exact thing. It's materially the same thing, which is why I can't wrap my head around if this is going to take off with WADA and auctioning games. It's like, yeah, there's one seal Super Mario Brothers with a sticker seal, but you can find a sticker Super Mario Brothers fairly easily.
Right. The type of people who are going to be interested in collecting that are, it's a small percentage.
To me, it's different than comic book graded collecting, because it's not like anyone can go out and just find like an Amazing Fantasy 15 laying around to begin with, the first Spider-Man. So the material difference between a graded comic from a 4.5 to an 8 or a 9, it's still the same comic, but they're all the same thing still. Does that make sense? So with video game graded collecting, that video game that's graded, the value of that, because it's sealed versus it not being sealed, that's what is making it that value. Does that make sense? Am I explaining that correctly?
I agree mostly with you. Not 100%, but yes, it makes sense.
Sure. Because if I have a minty fresh DuckTales 2 over there, the only difference between Heritage wanting it is a seal or not. That's really the difference.
My comparison, though, would be more like, I agree, especially emotionally, about sealed collecting, but wouldn't having a slabbed Amazing Fantasy, and then having a trade paperback version of it be the same as having a sealed NES game and then having a ROM version of it?
Yeah, that would be a better comparison, because you're still being able to experience it in an aftermarket way. Is that what you mean, in a re-released way?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't see it necessarily as different. I wouldn't try to make the argument that it's different. I would just make the argument that I don't have interest in that.
Sure. But you see what I mean, though? You can still experience a sealed game as a collector not having it sealed.
Right.
It's materially the same exact item.
Sure.
That's what I mean. It's just what state of release is it in? That's all. Someone opened it or not.
I'll show you a state of release.
So it's interesting. You use water before the soap. So anyway, so what's interesting is that the collector Dan here, Bronte, wants to get into collecting artwork, cover artwork, like the original versions of these artworks. He's holding up the Street Fighter II Champion Genesis version artwork. He acquired that. So because back in the day, there was no Photoshop. You actually had an artist draw something. You take a picture of it and then put it and reproduce it on your box. And so it's art collecting. And the reason I'm talking about this is because, to me, in a way, I see sealed game collecting as art collecting. That's what I think is more of an analog to.
No, I would agree. I mean, there's a few games that I wouldn't mind having, like, sealed or graded, but just because I like the artwork.
Yes.
And it's the same way, like, I'm not an active slabbed comic book collector, but there are a couple that are nice to have.
I just
don't see it as a whole thing, because at the end of the day, who's going to end up wanting a sealed Kung Fu Heroes?
Oh, there might be a few people.
I mean, I brought it up because it's me, but I'm just saying in the future.
Yeah, we talked about it before. How many people actually would want the sealed one versus settling for a complete in box copy that's worth, 10% of the value or 20% of the value of the sealed one? That's what it comes down to. I mean, you can still experience the great artwork of Princess Tomato sealed or just in box.
Okay, sure.
It's the same thing. With the added bonus is that you can actually play the cartridge and look at the cute little manual with all the cute little... What fruits are on Princess Tomato besides the tomato?
Everyone. It's a whole claymation ensemble of Princess Tomato, I think. I
can't remember the name.
Cucumber. I don't remember.
There's a cucumber?
Yeah, there's Percy Persimmon.
Persimmon. There's a persimmon. Yeah. That's right. Good old Percy. We play that almost every year on the marathon.
Yeah, it's marathon. It's like Maniac Mansion. It's a really bad one to play on the marathon because you're not accomplishing anything in 5-10 minutes.
So Dan traded a sealed copy of Stadium Events in 2014 for the original box painting for Panic Restaurant.
Sure.
To me, that's actually interesting. I'd rather have the artwork than the sealed statement, to be honest.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, actually.
Let's see. He has the original paintings for Blades of Steel, Mechanized Attack, and Ren and Stimpy Time Warp. Not familiar with that. Blades of Steel would seem cool. Mechanized Attack, I don't remember that one being that eye-popping to me.
But... No, but Blades of Steel would be pretty rad.
Most of the Konami stuff is fantastic. Yeah. So I guess the Contra one that he's after, it exists. But the person that sold it doesn't know where the buyer is. It sounds like it's somewhere out there.
Oh,
so that's why there's a $100,000 bounty on this at this point to get this. So, you know, it comes down to now this would be interesting if this actually develops as a thing because most of these are one of a kind, unlike sealed games.
Oh yeah.
So this is really
this is
to me this is more makes sense of auction off these.
Yeah.
Have these come to auction in Sotheby's and. All right, now we have a Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat. This is a great game from 1993 on the NES. You know what I mean? Like, they could be all hoity-toity at the guys with the magnifying glass looking at game art. I just think it's interesting.
Yeah.
Some of the guys show up that do the art, come to, like, Portland, other events like that. But a lot of those guys don't even... they have some of their original artwork, but not all of it.
Right.
It gets out there. The companies keep it. So... All right, anything else? Yeah, check out the article from Chris. It's very interesting. And like I said, Dan seems like a good guy. Boy, we used to butt heads back in the day. We can reminisce over a sandwich or two.
Everyone mellows down with age.
It's just as ages. I don't have the energy anymore, too. FlexPro Meals, Ian. It's a meal delivery company that sends healthy, pre-made meals to your doorstep. Their goal isn't to give you salad, but epic recipes.
Yeah.
Like brisket, mac and cheese.
Backyard barbecue, game day chili.
Oh my god, are you kidding me? Pesto chicken, the famous pasta la vista, the Speedy Gonzales braised chicken meal. Have you had that one yet?
Not yet. My,
it's like a pound of meat almost just sitting there,
delicious
for you with some rice there. They make healthier versions of meals that you are used to, and it's a lifestyle change. It helps you out by giving you a meal plan you can do. 3 per day, 2 per day, 1 per day. It's up to you how many you want to get sent to your house. There's a weight loss fat trimmer plan for about $8.50 a meal and a lean muscle larger portion. That's what I use for about $11 a meal. The portions are big.
Humongous.
You'll fill up with this. Yeah. So right now, you can get 20% off your first order with FlexPro Meals using code CUPODCAST when you visit flexpromeals.com. That's 20% off your FlexPro Meals first order with code CUPODCAST. I'm getting hungry thinking about this. I can't think clearly. FlexPro Meals. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data, and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can even view stock collections, such as the 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can view how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you can never miss the moment, the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of the CU podcast a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. You can sign up at cupodcast.robinhood.com. All right, but Ian...
Yes, sir.
Do we have any tales from the game store?
From the game store.
Do we have any tales from the expo?
From the expo.
We got to have something.
Well, after that podcast, I did go to the bathroom and wash my hands. And someone
can we explain? We set that up for the YouTube audience. At the podcast.
All right. Instead of a tale from the game store this week. Sorry, I'm sick and nothing excited happened yesterday. I was gone all weekend, too. I wanted to keep conversation going a little bit longer before we went to Q&A. And earlier in the day, I realized that I had had this thing that I always think about is scary every time I go to a convention. Now, some people don't like us.
It's really?
That's fine. It's okay. So I always, maybe it says more about me.
Probably.
But whenever I would go to the bathroom and wash my hands at a convention, or really any crowded area, but more so at a convention because there might be people there who don't like me. I'm always afraid that I'm going to use the restroom, wash my hands, and then walk out, and someone who doesn't like me is going to chase after me and yell, "He didn't wash his hands!"
And start something? Start a rumor?
Yeah, start a rumor where everyone's like, "Oh my god, he doesn't wash his hands? Holy shit, did you know Ian doesn't wash his hands? That dude just took a fat dump and did not wash his hands.
I didn't like him before because of his acerbic viewpoints, but god, his cleanliness, ooh, that's a shame.
That's a real shame. So, yeah, that's where this joke comes from. We had a lot of good toilet jokes over the weekend, but that was really...
I wouldn't call them all good. The audience got a little rowdy.
They were all fine.
I had to whip them into shape at one point. Got a little potty mouse on them.
Well, then we went out to eat, and we got even more potty focused.
Oh, you want to talk about that? You want to talk about us eating 5 pounds of meat?
No, I don't. And the thing I talked about there must spread organically.
What did you talk about? You talking about when we went to the Korean barbecue?
Yes.
What are you referencing that spread?
Taking a shower, Pat.
Oh, yes.
So don't say anything more.
Yes, okay. Yes, okay. Yeah. Okay. See, this is where the lines blur between Ian's hygiene and what's innuendo, what's rumor, what's real. I won't give it away in case Ian...
I like to screw with people.
Unless Ian drops that tidbit on you.
Oh, yes. One hell of a tidbit.
So we don't have any tales from the game store?
Unfortunately,
no other
not.
Convention... This may not make the YouTube error because... It seemed like it was fun. I'll tell you this.
It was a very relaxed convention.
Yeah, even though it was busy.
It was busy, but like...
It was laid back. It's Southern California.
I wasn't running around. I was in bed at a relatively decent hour. It doesn't mean I slept, but I was in bed at a relatively decent hour. Everyone was friendly. Everyone just seemed very
relatively
calm.
For Ian, that's like 3 a.m. for relatively decent hour. Ian's sleep patterns are different than the rest of us.
I tried to go to bed at 8:30 last night.
8:30?
Yeah, when I called you, I literally turned the light off and tried to go to bed, and then like 2.5 hours later, I was like, I can't. I hurt too much, so I got up and went out to the living room.
You don't fall asleep to the melodious voice of Robert Stack on Sunday? I do that. Seriously?
That's a good voice.
That's how I fall asleep sometimes.
Yeah, I would do it.
Yeah.
I've fallen asleep to Stack. I've fallen asleep to the Forensic Files guy.
Yeah, they both have voices in that... They're very soft but firm. And
yeah, soft but very sturdy.
Yes,
yes, a sturdy voice.
You don't want to be told that you didn't do your chores in any of those voices.
Oh no!
Did you know you did not make your bed today, Ian? Right away, Mr. Stack.
I love Robert Stack, but he might be a scary grandpa.
I think he would have been nice. He would have been the guy.
Nice.
I think he would have been like, "Wait, what's that behind your ear?" and pulled out the nickel.
Pulled out an alien spacecraft.
So let's take a look at that report card, son.
Yeah.
See, my grandfather had like a Robert Stack type attitude, but he was kind of cold. You know, he was a you know, salt of the earth type of guy. Worked at a warehouse for like 37 years. You know, he said, "I worked there for 37 years as a badge of honor." But a little cold. A lot of those guys that grew up, you know, the Greatest Generation, they could be a little cold when it came to children. And grandkids. Like, he didn't slap me around or anything.
No,
but,
you know.
A hug would have been nicer once in a while, Grandpa. Just, that's all.
My grandpa Urbacher was the same way. Real
nice. Name?
Grandpa Urbacher.
Urbacher?
Urbacher.
That's a great name, Urbacher.
It's my mom's last name, yeah.
Okay.
But, I mean, nice guy. Loved him. But, yeah, I mean, if you got a show of affection maybe once a year, you were doing pretty
good. Just once a year. That's all, Grandpa.
Yeah.
He would tell good jokes, though. That was his way. Like, old Italian grandpa would tell you jokes and little turns of phrases and things like that. You know, but what was I talking about? Oh, I sold the first game from my collection officially, not a double. I sold a complete box uninvited. And that was a game that I have a cartridge of, but I don't have a double of the box version of it. So that's the first taste of it, of my collection going. I also sold stuff like I had a black sports Dreamcast console. I sold an Omni trivia game that I got as a gift just because, you know, I probably will never play it. And there was a guy that was like, one guy said, "You know what? I'm into that weird stuff from like the 70s. It actually came out in the 80s. He was like, "I want that." I'm like, okay, take it.
It was very cool looking.
Yeah, very cool. I'll never get around to it. That's the start, like how Ian first started dribbling out his NES games into the world. that's Pat starting to dip his toe in the water about moving his games.
It gets easier the more you let go. It's just an avalanche.
It's an avalanche, just a release.
Yep, it's a release.
A gush, a gush.
A gush.
So again, this is a weird segment. It's an intro segment in the middle of the show. It's a palate cleanser for the rest of the show, talking about our experiences. This is for the audio listeners. So that's what it's for. This is why you guys spread the word that this is an audio podcast to that YouTube crowd that doesn't like us sometimes. Spread the word about that. All right, we have a Patreon Q&A topic. Ian, how do you access the CU Podcast Patreon? I know it's on the tip of your tongue.
You go to podcast or patreon.com. Fuck. I'm blaming that on being sick. You go to patreon.com/CU Podcast. They both start with P.
Ian likes to pee and then put soap on his hands for water.
Yeah, that's right, I do.
So this was an interesting result because there's going to be, it seems like first and second place are going to be running neck and neck in the foreseeable future. We've started something on the Patreon between the people that get into this. So in third place at a miserable 4%.
That's like one vote.
Jesus. That's Gary Johnson territory. Should sports teams ban its players from Fortnite? 4% give a shit about that topic. And the only reason I brought it up is because the Knicks coach complained about the players not having focus and not getting sleep because potentially they're playing Fortnite. And you hear this from hockey players and basketball players that, yeah, they're playing Fortnite a lot. So that's why I thought it'd be an interesting conversation to have. Second place, hanging on for dear life, 44%, which is usually that's good enough to win first place. What would the CU podcast look like without that? So that's hanging around. There's now a battle with the Patreon subscribers, with the Patreons. And in first place, what NES game, at 52%, what NES games are a lot better, capital, lot better, with two players versus one? Ian, take it away.
So I personally think pro wrestling and ice hockey are way better with real players as opposed to computer players. The ice hockey computer players have done nothing for me in terms of the year. In terms of training me for the marathon.
Apparently not, Ian. But there's always tight battles during the marathon.
Always very, hockey. Very close.
Very close.
But yeah, ice hockey would be one of those for me. Another one would probably be, like I said, pro wrestling. After a while, pro wrestling is boring if you don't have someone to yell at. It's a good game. It's a good game, but well, you can only go so far.
Your title has not been defended in a few years now, Ian. So we got to defend
that title.
Thought
we defended it last year.
No, we didn't.
Oh, okay.
I don't believe we did. You still have it hanging up, so.
Yeah.
I'm actually using the NES Guide app, this is not a plug, to search for all the multiplayer games right now. How many think single player games do you think are on the NES?
Non-single player?
Non-single player. So ones that are at least one player. Doesn't it be simultaneous, one or two alternating?
250.
Oh, it's going to be more than that. 352. Well, I thought it'd be more than that. I thought it'd be like 400. So more than a little less than half of the NES games are multiplayer. So I have this on here. So you're going to stick with sports games?
Yes.
I'm going to say games like Dr. Mario, like two player puzzle games, are
sure,
to me, a lot more fun when you're challenging an opponent. Tetris, people get in that mode, but I think puzzle games lend themselves to fun. Board games, you can't play Anticipation by yourself. It's just not fun.
Sure.
By yourself.
Anticipation's sort of fun when you play. You have to make your own fun, but it can be real fun if you play it with two players.
Go watch. I forget we did that. That was probably 2011. The Anticipation video.
Yep.
Was it even that late? That was 2011.
Might have been.
Me and Ian, Pat Daniels Punk video, Ian as the unnamed game store employee/manager. We had fun, and that was off the cuff, a lot of us talking about the game. It was a fun time.
Yeah, the whole part where we're actually sitting there playing is more or less just...
We're the head of the time. That was a Let's Play in 2011. We could have been the game grumps, but actually grumpy gamers. We could have been that, Ian.
Yeah.
We could have been that. I'm just going through the list here. What do you think about the arcade games? Are they less fun, the alternator games, like waiting to play a Galaga round when someone's playing? Would you rather just be a single player?
Yeah, I don't like that.
You don't like just competing for a high score?
I mean, I do, but you can do that without having the alternating. I feel like that takes you out of it.
You think so?
But it's fine in the arcade, I guess. I don't know. Depends on the game.
So alternating games like Arkanoid, you would think, nah, it's not worth waiting around, giving the controller asshole.
I mean, it's a fun game. Maybe.
Fighting games.
Yeah, there's just none of those really on the NES. But yes, fighting games in general.
There's none. You got Best of the Best. You got Turtles Tournament Fighters. None.
I know there's Tournament Turtles Fighters. Tournament
Tournament Turtle Fighters. What about platformers like Super Mario Brothers? Is it fun to wait? Well, 1 and 3, 2 is single player.
It's just fine. I mean, it's fun to do that, especially if you're hanging out with a friend, taking it easy. But I wouldn't say it's better.
I think Super Mario 3, the fact that you work together to clear a world is pretty cool.
That is true.
And they brought that to Super Mario World. I think that was interesting. That was one, I think, things that really stood out for me was that map overworld. But using two players, and then you see, oh, who would be able to get the hidden item house, you know, like who's going next.
Right.
There was a lot of fun. I think Super Mario 3 is a lot more fun with two players. You're working together on a mission. What do you think about running gun shooters like Contra or Super Z's? Is that
better with two?
You think so?
Well, that
can hamper your style,
it's
though.
It's different with two.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
Because especially if one person is pretty good, the other person isn't, and then you get caught up because it's like waiting for the person. Then with the jumps, you know, if you jump too early, if they're way behind you, then you stop and you die. You need communication with those games. That's like NBA Jam playing with your partner. You need to always be talking to the person.
Yeah.
You know, today was an NBA Jam on the NES. There. What about Master Chu and the Drunkard Who? That's a good two-player simultaneous experience.
It's a miserable game.
Miss Pac-Man. Well, the Tengen version had a simultaneous mode on it as well. We're fuck it. NES Marathon, we're doing a lot of Miss Pac-Man block and just playing through that version of it. Paperboy, we got to wait for the person. Rampage, I think Rampage you have to play. Two players, or else you'll never finish that fucking game.
I hate Rampage, but I hate it even more in single player.
I mean, cause you'll just—it was 120 levels, whatever it is. It just goes forever,
something like
repeating.
That.
It's nuts. Side Pocket, my friend AJ Side Pocket. I think that's probably even. It's a different experience beating the arcade at that. Good old Silkworm. That's better simultaneous.
Yes, it is
most likely. Games like Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, I think, would probably be more fun. It's not good playing the computer at game show stuff usually.
No, I don't think about
like Family Feud.
The answer, yeah.
Like Family Feud on the NES, you want to play with someone else, or even the Super Nintendo version with that. And then Wild Bear and the No Gang, two players, it's double the fun. You just got to wait around for your throwing frisbees and skating over dogs 100%. And shit. Wayne Gretzky hockey is never fun.
No,
it's fun with zero players. It's fun in the sleeve.
It's most fun left on the
it's
shelf.
The most fun you have that with that game is comparing the different box cover art when they lost the license to the Kings and he has a blank sweater on, hockey sweater. That's the most interesting that game gets.
All right.
Eraserhead's two players. I didn't know that, really. Huh. Is that true? Or is that just not in the app correctly? Being that my last dev was a piece of crap and did a lot of things wrong. Spoilers, I have a new dev that's working on the app. It's going to update it. It's going to come out hopefully within a few weeks. He probably messed up stuff like that in the app. But we'll fix that for that. Sorry, I didn't want to end on that note. Anyway, any other games better, two players?
No.
That you think of? Not Danny Sullivan?
No.
Really?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe Danny?
Yeah.
I think the Super Off-Road games are more fun with two players, but they don't end. So at that point, it's just like, well, then everyone eventually beefs up their car. And then it's not really fun anymore.
Sure.
No, wait a minute. They do end.
Yeah, they do.
Super Off-Road does end. Danny ends at the Indy 500.
They do end. Yes.
Okay. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I think only the arcade one ends for Super Off-Road. Maybe that's what it is. Because you can just play forever. All right. So anyway, if you want to see Ian's writings or get his monthly hangout when he's in a lot better shape than this now, it's
Patreon.com/CU podcast.
Q&A time. On the CU podcast.
I can do one. I'm done. I'm shivering.
This is from at Darth Rook. What is 1 hour of video game fun worth to you? $1, $2, $5. So this is interesting just because I never thought about what my entertainment time is worth.
So I always try to, like, when I look at it, I try to figure out, like, the, for instance, if I'm having fun with a good video game, I try to look at the original release cost of it and how many hours I put into it and divide it out and see, you know, what it is. And, you know, most of the time it equals out, you know, for an average modern game, you know, you're averaging out to about $2 to a dollar an hour.
If it's a 60-hour game or 50-hour game.
So I feel like that's probably a pretty good a pretty good way to look at it, at least to create some sort of base. Because, I mean, where would you start for a base? You look at something like that, and you look at the average number of hours people put into games, and you kind of divide it out that way. To me, it depends on the kind of fun I'm having and what it is. You know, fun is not just fun. There's all sorts of, you know, ways you can enjoy yourself. So, you know, for me, it would be anywhere from, you know, $2 to play this game for an hour, or, you know, $25 to go to a show, or $50 to go to a show, and that's, you know, that's like $25 per hour. So
this is asking about video game fun specifically.
Video game fun specifically.
They're looking for you to say what to you is worth it. So
$2 to $3 an hour.
See, I'm more loosey goosey about it. I'm more, well, if I play a game for 10 hours, and you know, if I spend $10 on it, if I had a good time, that's fine. Then again, that's $1 an hour, I guess, still.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've never thought about it in this way.
It's an interesting question.
Just because other video games you can always go back to.
Right.
Other forms of entertainment, like going to the movies, that's at this point you spend $20 going to the lot with the surcharge. And that's 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours with trailers, right. You know, when you go see something like Infinity War. So 3 hours for $20. Did I have fun? Was it a good time out? Then $8 an hour is perfectly fine.
Right.
I've gone to, like, you know, I've gone to orchestra for video games. I went to the Zelda Orchestra that was here a few years ago for Breath of the Wild, which was great. And that was, what, like $50, $60? And that was only, like, what, 2 hours, 2.5 hours? That was well worth it. That was worth $30 an hour or yep. $25 an hour. Because that's almost a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Or going to see a play. That could be $40. You can go see Mamma Mia on Broadway for Valentine's Day. It could be $100 or $150. And that could be worth it if you're having a good time. It depends, I guess, what your budget is and how you value, what your time is being spent for. So for video games, to me, it's a tough question just because it's also tough because I don't know if this means for new games or old games. Because old games, you can buy a fucking little Samson for $1,000 and maybe it takes you an hour and a half to beat it in an hour. And is that worth you know, $1,000 for that hour? Probably not. You know, I would say no, especially if you can play it on an emulator for free. Emulator. So, you know, it's a tough question to ask. I think, though, this is probably how Steam games and digital games are more being treated in terms of, I guess, people playing them. I don't know how many 60-hour indie games are out there.
Sure.
But I would think those would cost more than a you know, a quick pickup and play like Speedrunner, you know, or Freerunner, I should say, like where, okay, it's like whatever, $4.99 and you get some fun out of it for 10, 15 minutes and you're done.
Right.
You know, so. Anything to add?
No.
Ian's a trooper here. I basically told him to go home. He refused, so.
Gotta get it done. But I'm ready to go home now.
You're ready to
I'm
go
so home. Ready to go home now.
Well, thanks so much, everyone. You're listening to this live. No, you're not listening to this live. You're listening to it live, but it's not live. I'm going to go stream a bit after this and hang out. I got a certain Super Nintendo guidebook for sale at ultimatesnes.com. The NES Marathon for Rady Children's Hospital is coming up March 9th and 10th with Andre, Gerard, Alex, Vonnie, and friends. And that's going to be March 9th and 10th. Go to nesmarathon.com to donate. And you also can be a sponsor there as well. And okay, we're having fun here. Ian looks like he's ready to pass out. So. I'm going to disinfect that mic in a second. So that's Ian Ferguson.
Goodbye.
I'm Pat Contry. We will see you in a week.